After reaching the shore, I love the sea. After the hair grays, I understand the world. Yesterday's joys come together. Today, at this moment, they find meaning. Today's joys will come together. To find their meaning tomorrow. To live my life that I never lived. Unable to bear this, upwards I go. To kindle my never-ending passion. Here and now, I am coming out of it. Here and now, I immerse into the depths. I look at myself as someone else. Not with any reason, just naturally. With clarity, like that of a sun ray. I don't belong to these depths, but I dwell in them. As a mirror, I am born. I become everything I see. The joy of a kitten's caress on my feet. Is a life enough for me? I want to stroke everything I come across, beautifully. I will always be myself. Every day I will live life to the fullest, will object a life of conventions. I will live a life of supreme essence. I will become as pure as possible, with the wind flies the hawk, beautifully, without a path, it being its own reality. Like the rock that goes to the depth of the waters. With a renouncing of sound, I drown in the sights I see. Like the bird that rides on the bull's hump, I will live upon earth, would join hands, and walk along with earth. Some kind of ecstasy is flowing. That provides depth. This moment envelops like a mother, singing a lullaby, and after reaching the shore, I love the sea. After the hair grays, I understand the world. Yesterday's joys come together. Today, at this moment, they find meaning. Today's joys will come together to find their meaning tomorrow.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Mel.
And I'm Pippa. We're the creators and editors of Earthrise, the podcast and platform that focuses on the connection between human rights and environmental issues.
Just a quick message before we begin. The views and research presented on this podcast are either our own or referenced on our website, www.earthrights.co.uk. We generally always record a few weeks ahead of release, so some facts or situations may have changed during this time.
Hello, Melanie. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. We're going to be talking about Shiva's survival story today.
Hey.
And it's a story of being trafficked from Sri Lanka to the UK.
Over 4 years.
4 years.
4 years trafficked.
4 years from Sri Lanka to the UK. And then all the difficulties that you faced upon arriving in the UK and being here for the last 23 years.
That's true.
So I met you in the park in Bristol, didn't I? And we recognised each other. And so I came and sat with you and your friend. And then you sort of turned around to me and you said, oh, I have a story to tell you about my life. Like, I come from Sri Lanka.
You started telling me, and frankly, I was quite shocked that you are still here and still alive to tell the tale. So with so much perspective and having gone through so much growth, which is what your poem talks about that I read out at the beginning of this podcast.
I'd never heard someone who had experienced being trafficked.
It's quite hard to see those people because they're not really well.
Yeah.
People who can go through that and coming out of the other side, they got the ability to tell the story and share the story to others. Without any issues, without any.
Yeah. And you've been through so much that everything else, like your poem says, anything that you have to face is not going to be as much as what you faced during those 4 years, or is going to be very different.
Whatever happens today, you're not going to find the meaning today.
No.
You're going to find it tomorrow, whether sometime a bad can happen to us. But that can lead you to a good future.
Mm.
Because a bad happened to you and suddenly you, oh, this thing happened, now I have to move this way. And you're moving that way, that maybe that move, that path can give you something better.
Yeah, it's all a part of the journey too.
It's very meaningful every day. If you think about tomorrow, what you did, and it's very meaningful to you.
Mm.
And you will say, oh, this is why I'm here in this place now.
Yeah.
Because I did this. That's what happened to me. So you find me, you find answers.
We did do an episode, a bonus episode recently, with a guy called Orvida about the Sri Lankan ethnic conflict, which took place between 1983 and more or less 2009, although the peace process is still going on.
Yeah.
We explored in that episode just how difficult it is to move past and to rebuild after these conflicts, and
yeah,
each individual is so much a part of that transition, and it takes years and years and years and years and years to overcome the individual trauma, but also the national trauma.
Yeah.
And so your journey, whilst you've, as you describe in that poem so well, you've now been able to grow and see the meaning of it all. It took a long time.
Yeah.
And you've been through a huge amount ever since you left Sri Lanka when you were 6 years old. Mm. And we heard, we'll return to that, of course, but we did hear in the episode with Orvida about the history of the ethnic conflict between the Sinhalese and the Tamils, two communities that had coexisted for thousands of years, but then until the colonial era when Britain shook things up, and then when the British left and the Ceylon government dissolved, both groups of people lay claim to power, but it went to the Sinhalese because they were the majority. Obviously, you were young at the time. What was your understanding of the political situation at the time, even if you're looking back at it now?
When I look at it back, in Tamil places, we got lots of students who are very educated people, and we got good universities in Jaffna to Parthitura and some places. So what happens is the Tamil don't get any, they can't work as a government occupation. They can't find any government occupations. Even if you're highly qualified, you can't get any jobs.
Mm.
So what you do, you are a bit more like, most of the time they were doing agricultures and other stuff, just being a labourer, you know. So in Tamil area, all the police are being occupied by Sinhalese. So you don't get any Tamil man to be a policeman. You see, the government occupations are only being given to the Sinhalese people. So what they do, they come to our country, our places, Tamil area, and they target innocent men just to put in, just to give fake, just to create an allegation towards them.
Okay.
Say, look, you did this. Because some police officers, what they do, if a Sinhalese man doing something wrong, and if he's related to a political issues, they're not going to arrest him. They will find a target. They will find another person to put it there, which is a Tamil man, doesn't have any clue about Sinhalese or any language or nothing. So they can do a fake statement. They harass you and they put you in a jail, torture you and all that.
Mm.
So that's how it started. So the opportunity, we couldn't get any equal rights or opportunity. So the campus students started to have a first demonstration and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're masters and you're doing everything,
doing so much
and you don't get anything. All you do, you go back to farm work,
yeah,
or doing fishing. So they started it, didn't work out. Then they come across to pick up weapons. What I see is the main target was to wipe out the whole Tamil.
Yeah.
So before the British left, it was DSNR Nayaka, Bandara Nayaka. And some, so there's Tamil and Sinhalese. They were, got together and they were fighting for the freedom. But when they got the freedom, it's I think Bandara Nayaka and DS Sena Nayaka who got the power. So then, we were saying, this is our land. We should, even if you want to run your country, give us a half or a little quarter for us, and we will enjoy. We will find it. So we had the ability to create our own police and own military and own governing system. That was a threat. So the Sri Lankan, they took Indians, militaries to come. And that was, I think, 1986, 87, I remember. It was a big explosion. I was 3 years old. All the Indian militaries to come to our land in order to keep the peace, you know. But the Indian, while they're trying to keep peace, they're trying to assassinate the leader of Tamil Nadu. When he found out he's going to do it, that's why he bombed Rajiv Gandhi, Gandhi's son.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes to Sri Lanka to visit Jaffna, he bombed him. A lady comes with as a pregnant lady, as a suicide bomber, and kills him. Because it's to show that, look, India, don't get involved. And they didn't stop. They took all the troops back away. Then we started fighting for years and years and years, just fighting. Mm-hmm. Then I born that time, 84. Yeah, from born till I leave the country, it was civil war. All you see is just people crying, and all the time crying. Every night you see fireworks. You get bombshells everywhere. You don't have a place to eat. You don't have a place to stay. You get diarrhea. You get people die. Women get raped. Men get beaten up and pulled out. They get disappeared. You know.
Yeah.
And you see. Then you see dead bodies everywhere, quiet, like a haunted village. Then you walk different villages to village.
And at this point, you were still with your family, weren't you?
With my family, yeah.
Yeah, and so you were walking, you were going about your lives together, trying to find food, trying to do whatever you could to stay alive.
Yeah, so the day I got really awaken up is the day I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
I was 3 years old, and we were... In Sri Lanka, we don't have toilets, so we just go to the jungle, the bush.
Yeah.
We go to the bush on the riverside, have a poo and wash yourself. So we were walking to do that, and then there's a military truck got blast off. From that day, I remember everything.
Mm-hmm.
That woke me up. Boom.
And so that was when you were three?
Mm. 6 years.
Surviving.
I lost my parents.
So at six years old, your parents were what, bombed?
I don't know.
You don't have any idea what happened to your parents, but you just couldn't find them. Because I remember when you were telling me before, you said you'd lost everyone.
It was a church.
Okay.
So all the civils, what we do? So the military comes. When the military comes, we know from the birds and the dogs, or somebody will come and tell you the militaries are walking this way, so go different places, you know. So normally we find shelters in big buildings like temples or churches.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was about, and all I heard, the whole church is going down, boom, with a couple of shells, bomb shells.
That you were in?
I wasn't here. I was a bit far away.
Okay.
The shockwave made me to go down. So there's a man held me, and he was running. Then I lost everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So someone picks you up and runs away with you because he knows you're going to not survive if you stay here next to a falling church.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And then you were on the street for a while.
I was on the street for a while, and 8 or 9 years old, I got caught by a street vans, you know, the orphanage centres.
Mm-hmm.
Look for. Yeah.
When I went to India, there was a lot of children in Delhi.
Same thing.
And there's just loads of them, and they all decide, sometimes they decide to run away because it's a more free life to live with their friends.
Yeah, they beat you.
Yeah.
Abuse you.
And I was really surprised because none of them knew their ages. They all said, oh, it's my birthday today. And I was like, is it your birthday tomorrow
as well? Yeah.
And they were like, it's my birthday tomorrow. And they were really, they had each other, but they were on the street and they were vulnerable, of course. It was that sort of thing.
Similar, yeah.
But you were living in an orphanage as well?
There is a genuine orphanages.
Mm-hmm.
There is fake ones.
Yeah.
the fake ones been built by very, very intentional group of people or traffickers.
Yeah.
So wherever there's a civil war or war, these people are there.
Yeah.
And they target all the street kids, the young kids.
And they brought you to a fake orphanage, essentially.
Yeah. They take you to a fake orphanage.
And then you're sort of...
Get sold.
Yeah.
You get sold.
And you were sold. Mm. And...
Got sold with some other people, about 22 people.
And then one day, selling you, they decided to take you away.
10 years old, they... Yeah, they take you... They put me on a fucking container, then on a boat, and India. From India, we were again in a big container.
Okay. So you don't know when you left exactly Sri Lanka, because...
I would say the timing was like 10 years old, 10, okay. 11 years old, yeah.
But by this point, you'd already spent years of your life in the civil war.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then the first place was India.
Can you imagine 3 years old, 4 years old, you're supposed to sit with your mom in a lap.
Have her hair stroke your hair and...
Get a tap by my mom and have the best time, you know?
Mm.
But you know.
It's not like that at all.
So I had the best education ever since young.
Yeah, weren't in school.
No.
No one was in school.
So what I learned is what a human can be, what capable of, how deep they can be evil and how deeply they can be loving.
Mm.
That's what I learned there. So, orphanage, then 10, Sri Lanka, India to Iran, Iran to Ethiopia, Ethiopia to, we cross Douala. Yeah, we just cross all the way. So, Ethiopia here, Douala is here, Cameroon. So, you walked all the way.
So, when you left... Sri Lanka and you went to India and then you went to Iran. So the first part you were on a boat. Could you see anything? You weren't allowed to see. You were in the dark, and that was for a couple of months, no doubt.
No idea.
And then eventually you're in Iran for another period of time.
Yeah, in a room. They keep you in a room until they find a way to traffic.
Get you out, yeah. And you're still with these 22 people who you were sold?
No, Indians, in India, some girls got sold.
Right.
And Iran, some men got sold.
Okay.
And in Ethiopia, no, but some of them died, 4 of them died in the middle of Africa. You get raped, middle of the way, you get raped, beaten, everything. You can't go anywhere, there's no choice.
Well, before we get to Douala, you're in Ethiopia and you walk for...
Nearly 1.5 years.
Probably 1.5 years all the way to Douala.
Just for anyone who wants to know.
So what we do is...
5,590 kilometres.
Yeah, but when we walk, we have to...
Zigzag, no doubt.
Yeah, because the borders, it's a problem.
Yeah.
So sometimes we're stuck in one place for months and months until he corrupt the military officer or the border person. Or either when they're changing time, we just run through the borders, sometimes get shot, all that. So we can't constantly walk. We were staying every different individual place next to the borders. So that wasn't the route.
What did you do during the day?
Oof, just continue walking.
You'd just be walking all
walking,
day.
Walking, walking all day long. Then you find a camouflage somewhere like people can't see you. Then you have a little nap. Then again you walk.
Did you walk in the night time as well? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. And no doubt some people also died on this walk.
Yeah. We couldn't give them a burial.
No.
No, we just covered them with the leaves and rocks on the top. So the animal can't, you know, do something with it.
Yeah. Okay. It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
It's so hard to know how to respond because
Your brain can't think of it. You can't.
You can't get it unless you really have been through it.
Yeah.
And the behaviours towards you, as you say, you see the true limits of how...
Depth of darkness.
And how dark and evil people can be.
Yeah.
And how dismissive of a human life.
Trust me.
Yeah.
When a man put a uniform on, when you got a gun in his hand, that's it, he's deluded. He's deluded so badly.
And how were you fed? How did they keep you alive?
What they do, the traffickers, they're like an amazing network. So when one trafficker comes and cross the border, the other trafficker comes and takes over. And when he takes over, he will have potatoes. Most of the day we ate potato, years and years. Just little tiny pieces of potatoes. They cook it in the jungle. It's so funny. Same time, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Mm. So I get to Douala. In Douala, I was working there in a banana plantation.
Okay.
It was horrible. And from there, they...
Why was it horrible?
Because you wake up early morning, Melanie, very early morning, and you don't have shoes, you don't have anything, and you finish 6:30, 7 o'clock in the night.
Mm-hmm.
Early morning, they give you a baguette with Nutella and butter on it. They're Cameroon French colonies, you know, Douala. So I eat a little bit and I keep a little bit in my underwear. For later, it's soggy and it's fucked up, but still I have to keep it. Then from there, because I was a strong one, I guess, they took me to Cameroon. Cameroon, I think they didn't accept me. Nobody wants to buy me.
Okay, so what, they took you to a market in Cameroon?
No, they come to you. They come, Germans, Europeans. Yeah, most of Germans who loves those things.
Love humans.
Children's and stuff and organs, body parts. Indians got the best market ever going.
Bloody hell.
But yeah, body organs business is the best in Muslim countries and India.
Why?
One of the highest money making. Yeah. Okay. Because you're orphan and no one's gonna.
No one's gonna protect
you. Look for you, and no one's gonna search for you.
No one's gonna ask you. Who gives
a shit?
Exactly. Where your organ is from.
You got a fresh kidney, you got fresh everything. Here we go. Abuse you, rape you, and then take everything away from you. That's very normal. They butcher you, a kid, like a fish. Like a fishmonger.
By this point, you're what? Probably 12 years old?
I think so, yeah.
Maybe. This is just bearing in mind that you didn't know your age until a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
And then you've had to work back, piecing together the story.
Yeah.
Piecing together just how long each put.
Yeah.
For each point you were.
Yeah.
Where.
Yeah.
And for how long.
That was a big fuck up for me.
Yeah.
Everything just came out like a hurricane, like a tornado.
I can imagine, and I guess in a way, part of your body, part of you wants to imagine it as a much smaller amount of your life.
That's my personality, Melanie. Mm. From young, that's my personality. It's within myself. Mm. What I learned, what I went through, but I won't let that to affect me anymore in my life, because you've grown up now. So, I'm trying to get positive out of it.
Yeah.
You see. So from, Douala, Cameroon. And Cameroon, I was there for 3 months, 2 months, I think so. And Cameroon, they took me to France.
What, you were flown or?
They trafficked me like a pretend to be some one couple son.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that.
Blimey.
Yeah, they put your face and this and that. So they took me to France. In France, I stayed there in a big house, cleaning house and servants and this and that. That's the day I knew how to use a fork and knife.
So just one second. When you were going through from India all the way through to
Iran,
yeah. That was on a truck, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's when you say you were just in the truck.
Yeah.
And you were fed the food through the bottom.
No, not like that. They stop you and they give you a little box of food just to eat.
Okay.
And they don't open the curtain.
No.
Of long containers.
Okay.
So we hide inside the farmer's big massive tires, you know.
Okay, so you're always hidden.
Yeah.
For months and months. Months and months. So you don't see the sunlight.
You just breathe, piss, shit, everything in the same place, and that's it. So I'm good at claustrophobia.
Just so I can understand, how did you get from Iran all the way to Ethiopia?
Okay, from here, they were crossing the is that Red Sea?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they were crossing the Red Sea.
Okay.
And then boats. On the ferry, yeah.
Okay.
So when they're doing the ferry, and the container continues.
Yeah.
On the ferry. It's, I think that's the main port for all the import business, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's a very busy port.
Mm. So they've kept the same container that they had all the way back in?
Not from India. From India to Iran, we went on a different track. And Iran, they put us in a different truck.
Different truck, but you're in the same one since Iran.
Okay. Yeah. So they take you to Ethiopia. It took months and months and months and months and months and months. Yeah. Cameroon, they wanted to... There's a family, they pretend like I'm their son. And they said they took me to the...
How did they persuade the family?
Because...
They give them money, I guess.
Yeah, Cameroon, Douala, Lomé, Addis Ababa, and some... African countries, very poor, Melanie. So the traffickers, what they do, they go and watch all individual custom officers. And they follow them. And they follow where they go to a pub.
Right.
So when they drink and you just accidentally just act like you become a friend to them.
Right, yeah.
But the officer doesn't know that he knows it. Then they slowly become friends. And they say, listen, man, I'll give you this much US dollars. I'm going to send this couple of people this way. Just send them. So they do that. Does they corrupt all the poor places.
Mm-hmm.
And easily corrupt with dollars.
Yeah.
And they do it for you. So as a family, they put me on a plane. When I get to France, I lost with the family.
Oh, no.
They were in the same queue on the thing. And I got lost. The French government, they put me on a hostel.
Okay.
I was in a hospital for 2 weeks. Somehow, again, the traffickers, they went to the airport and looking for me and finding, and they're saying, I'm their guardians. And they came to the hostel and they took me again. And they beat the shit out of me because you're not listening. So they beat me again. And then from there, again, they trafficked me to London.
How did they get you to London on a ferry?
In a Waterloo train station on an Eurostar.
On the
Eurostar. Yeah, they take you and they, even there, they corrupt the officer.
I'm not surprised. I'm I don't know if this is really a widely held opinion, but some people do believe that there isn't corruption that exists in the UK.
I know.
And it's really hilarious. Mm.
So, yeah, then came to Eurostar and they say, stay there, someone will pick you up. And don't say nothing, be quiet. So I just stood there quietly in Waterloo Station. So the person got me and they kept me in a little room. And 2 hours later, this dark Sri Lankan guy saying, I'm your guardian, come on, come with me, let's go. So he took me. And when I got there, what he done, he applied me. He did everything, social security and this and that. And he took all the money. Then I have to wake up 3 o'clock in the morning and go with him to fish market and vegetable market and everything. Then come back, do the stock, then clean the whole shop. Then I stay, work hidden in the shop for until 11 o'clock, 12. Then twice a week or once or three times a week, I get beaten by him. He get drunk and he go, he beat. So me and another two boys were there, stuck.
And these were boys who were trafficked as well. Mm. And you'd met them on the way? Or?
No.
No, you'd met them in London.
In London, in East London, yeah. So one day he was beating me. I jump up from the second floor.
You jump out of the window from the second floor?
So I couldn't take it.
Yeah.
I broke my knee. And while it's broken, I just dragged and walk.
And at this point, you can't speak any English. You didn't speak any French. You speak Tamil. So you feel like an alien. And you've just been through the worst. You don't even know it was 4 years, but the worst period of your life. You've just left.
It was normal.
It was normal.
Because I'm very young. I didn't know.
That's all you knew. That's all you knew.
I thought everything was perfectly normal.
So, and you've run away now.
Yeah, I run away from him, which is 14 years old, I would say. 14 plus. I run away from him. Then that's it. From that day till now on, Kashanan, limbo, running around. Most of the time living in England is majority I was homeless.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometime in and out, but majority is.
And you're homeless because you're in limbo because until this year, you haven't had
leave to remain.
You haven't been given the asylum seeking status. You haven't been given a refugee status.
No, because they couldn't find any evidence of the trafficker.
That's been the case for 22 years. But a couple of years ago, you got help from which organisation was it?
I went to the Scotland Yard. I had a video interview with the Scotland Yard.
Mm-hmm.
So they found the description about the traffickers and all the information.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't get the trafficker for years and years and years and years.
And when you say they had this description, you'd have to give what?
Everything. His address and everything. How is he looks
whatever
like.
Whatever you had on them. Mm. Yeah. Okay. And that was from all different places or just the ones that had
just been... Just in London, yeah. So,
okay, so despite the fact that there's a whole organisation, a whole network of people working to get you from Sri Lanka all the way to London, they're concentrating on one man.
Not only one man, whoever survives, they it's dependent on the demand. So say you're going to a civil war or war place and you find 20 kids. Individual 20 kids, they recognise where they belong. What they're good at.
Mm.
If you're a good, tough, strong, they put you in a very hard work and then they sell you for a good.
Mm-hmm.
So like girls, if they're virgin, they sell it for a good ones.
Mm.
And or body parts. So so that's how they categorize and send people.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow I got caught to France to here. So 2002, I gave the report to Scotland Yard. But they found the trafficker 2020.
How did they find them?
They were looking with the little information I gave them. And they found the trafficker somewhere in Midland. It was there.
In the Midlands?
Mm. So when the police went to catch him, he ran away from them.
Uh-huh.
That's what made the case legit.
Legitimate because the fact that he was running away.
And he knew the evidence. Done something wrong. So it's a legit case.
Right.
But that time already I was a fucked up.
Yeah. So between 2002 and 2020, you have been living in the UK,
yeah,
on the streets, in and out of work, cash and work.
Yeah.
No, you're funding, stateless.
Nothing. Not even a single thing.
Not a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
No support.
Mm-hmm.
Friends that you make who help you if they can. How do you get by? What do you do? You were talking to me earlier about detention.
Yeah, detention is it came later. I mean, I was...
You were 14.
Yeah, 14, 16, I became a rude boy. A straight boy. Yeah. Badass, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was
whatever you could be.
I will do anything. Free, no responsibility, nothing. I was a dealer. That wasn't good.
You got, so the, because of being on the street, I guess you got into a crowd that was...
gang.
Yeah. And you needed the support of a gang. A gang offers some...
It's just a friends.
Yeah, they offer, they're a bubble.
Yeah.
And the culture of...
Yeah, they're my family.
Yeah.
Simple. Whoever, exactly. To me, whoever stick with me, they're my family. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have family. So I always value friends.
Yeah.
Whoever talk to me, I'll give my heart to them. I don't mind. So in London, I become a horrible person, turn into a stupid sociopath, going crazy, dealing wheelings, fighting, all the shit going on. Then I had a gang problem. Then I moved to Cheltenham. Cheltenham, the reason I moved because I was a good cricket player. I was playing for Essex in London.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, they said, you know what, just go to Cheltenham, better for you. Which is
who helped you?
Nasiruddin Dad, the England cricket team captain. That's how I became a very decent person. Disciplined, clear-minded, absolutely calm, relaxed.
So he took you in?
He took me in and he done it. He sorted me out. Then...
did he give you a place to live?
No, not like that. Just practice.
He just believed in you.
Yeah, he practiced.
And he gave you the love. Fearless. Some love.
Fearless. Then, from there, then I moved to Gloucester to Bristol. Drive off, fighting, gang fight, stealing. Last time I had sexual issues. It was just the...
with the trauma that you've been through...
I was fucked.
There's no surprise that anything is going to manifest itself into behaviour that you don't understand, you can't comprehend, you have no control over yourself because there's so much deeply rooted trauma in your physiology.
I mean, I didn't have a time to seek myself and recognise myself and see myself.
Because so do you have a child?
Yeah, I have a son. Yeah. So I don't... All these years, my body is a survival mode.
Yeah.
There is no calm. I do make it calm, but it's constantly a survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
Always, you know.
Have you been able to relax a little bit since they found your traffickers?
No. Before that, I was going through Hinduism and Buddhism, Christianity.
You were exploring.
Yeah, Islamic.
Spirituality.
Then I went to Isle of Wight, stayed there with the monks for 3 years in the church and helping them volunteer.
The Isle of Wight's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Where did you stay?
I stayed in the, it was a World War II massive church.
Is it near Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton, yeah. So I was in the church for 3 years with the monks, helping them.
Feeding.
Maintaining the church, cleaning, doing the prayers and all that, gospel reading. And then I came back to Bristol and I was helping with the Bible classes with Iranians. Because Iranians wants to convert to Christians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then I followed Buddhism. Because of Buddhism, I totally get it. Everything, I really understand. So it made me to stop everything, to be more relaxed and clear.
And clear-headed. And since the Southwest Trauma Society has helped Scotland Yard, or did
No.
Scotland Yard, okay, it's from the beginning, helped you to find your trafficker.
Yeah, that's how the Home Office...
And that's how the Home Office then... Because
the case became alive.
The case became alive and then they have granted you asylum and leave to remain. The Southwest Trauma Foundation has been helping you through what you experienced.
Yeah.
And how has that happened? Through sort of weekly meetings or phone calls?
No, I'm a special one.
Okay.
So I get to call whenever I want, anytime. She's open. She said, you're not... I'm not going to put any date for you. Anytime you call me, I will answer the phone. So yeah, no, my family, tracking my family for Red Cross.
Okay.
Given the family name to the Red Cross, and they were, it took about 4 years to track my family, and they found out, oh, you've got families here, here, here.
And you've been able to contact them, haven't you? Mm. That's nice.
Mm.
How was that?
I mean, they thought I'm dead.
Yeah. Naturally.
Oh, when I called them, they just went down screaming on the phone. So, it was nice.
Gosh, that's going to make me cry. Really? So, one of your brothers is still... One of your brothers passed away, didn't he?
Yeah, he got shot. Yeah.
He got shot.
Mm.
And the other is still... You've got quite a few siblings now.
I got cousins and nephews and this and that. But some of them I went through war trauma. Some of them got mental.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it.
So, who did you get to speak to? Your auntie? Or...
My aunties, yeah. My aunties and uncles.
And you're still in touch with them now?
Yeah.
And that's who you'd like to see, no doubt. No, you don't want to see
them. I don't want to see nobody.
You just want to go back to Sri Lanka.
Just to face that place and get all the traumas out and come back.
Yeah.
That's what I would
do. And that's what you're finding trouble with at the moment, is that essentially you've been given this leave to remain, but you're still a stateless person. There's no, you have no passport, no identity card or identity full stop legally for Sri Lanka or any of the countries that you've spent a huge period of your life, including England, where you've now spent the last 23 years.
Yeah.
So
it shows that a person can walk around the planet without anything.
Well, what do you want? What are you looking for?
What I'm looking for is that humanity has to acknowledge that the war and trafficking, all these dark knowledges, should be recognized and then creating this solid answer towards to it, you see, and make sure that teach the kids what dark mean, what bad mean, so when they get older, they're not going to fall into it, and they will put more positive to the humanity. The humanity should wake up. We should wake up. We all should wake up. It's all in our hand.
And in terms of something that you would like to see systemically done, you were saying about the detention.
Yeah.
The people who are trying to come into this country as refugees, yeah, as asylum seekers, they, yeah, might not even be classed as one of those when they enter the UK. And then, yeah, do you want to describe what you know happens?
Yeah, I mean, when you, as a refugee or seeker, when you come to this country, what happens is, whether you're a genuine asylum seeker or not, whether it's your genuine case or not, still, your liability to be detained, and that makes already like you're a criminal. You see, so they all always look at you like a criminal. They don't see you like a person, you know. So you're a criminal. You get detained. You're a criminal, and then the government don't give you nothing. You're not allowed to work. You're not allowed to do anything. So it makes them to voluntarily write letter and say, I go back to my country.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them don't want to do that because the real issues, they're coming from threat. They're coming from fear from other country.
From a
persecution. Yeah. They say, no, if you're going to send me, I will kill myself here.
Or I'll be killed there.
Yeah. So people have done that. So what I want is, I want the government to really to be more fair, you know.
There's a really complex irony, really, about the whole thing, because, like with the climate crisis, like with so many things that are going on, public money, tax, and public service, well, public services, particularly things that cost a huge amount, like the NHS or transport or this or that, are propped up financially by investment. And the investment, the profit that comes out of, say, North Sea oil or detention centres that people, rich people invest in, they, those things only make money if people are in them. So if people are in a detention centre and that runs, and people invest in that building, in that whole system, even unknowingly, a lot of people don't even know they're investing in it. Just like a lot of people don't know they're investing in polluting fossil fuels.
Yeah, that's true.
That destroy our planet as well in a different way. But we almost need to encourage a disentanglement of those investments so that the government doesn't continue to prop up.
They won't, darling. I mean, I think they've been there for years now. They can't, you can't get it out. It's already done. It's too heavy now. You can't carry it. You can't break it. All you can do is just change little rules and regulations. And if they can stop mistreating all the seekers and ethnic minority, then there is an amazing, you know, like, 1996, 97, 98, 99, I guess. I mean, I was in 99 here. So 2000, 2001, any seekers allowed to work. And they pay tax. They're allowed to have NI number.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2004, 2003, when the UKBA, the private organization, came to track down all the seekers, that's where they said, you're not allowed to work, you're not allowed to do anything, you're not allowed to do nothing. But before the British Home Office was good. You see, you're allowed to have your, you're not allowed to go anywhere else, but you can have the access that you need in this country. And they stopped it. Oh, the foreigners coming, taking all of the work and, you know. People like us need good services. National, that's the one.
NRM,
NRM.
This is what people do. It's a really, really good service.
But they don't give it to you.
They don't give it to you.
No, unless we ask them.
And the same, and unless someone refers you.
And rare, most of the solicitors doesn't even have, know that.
No.
Only most of the barristers know this.
Yeah, the solicitor I work for, that I'm an assistant to, he knows.
That same is supposed to be given, they should be giving me this when I 18 or 19 years old, definitely. But they haven't. They gave me the service, which is on 2017 or 18. That's the time, I had it. So these sort of services have to be, you know, in the leaflets to show that you got services like this for certain people, you know. And it's amazing how the detainees they run the detention center, you see. All the officers from G4S and everybody there. And they're just there to walk around and lock the cells and open the cells and doors and check, you know. But rest of the stuff is we do. Detainees clean the place, we cook, we clean the kitchen, we do all the painting and decorating, everything. So they pay you, I don't know, 15, 14 pounds a week. You got it. So you work all day from morning till evening.
And they pay you 14
pounds a week. So that 14 pounds a week supposed to be paid individual staff to do all that stuff, cleaning and everything. But so the detainees started to work inside and they don't get any qualification or any training to say this, health and safety, this, no, nothing. Just take your list, name, or just come and work. Then you work. So,
yeah, sir.
I don't like the way they treat. They treat them like a prisoners.
No.
And then
And they treat like you like you've done something wrong.
When very badly. Coming to this country.
All you've done is escape war, escape a trafficker, escape.
They don't think that right now.
And you finally got to somewhere that you have been told is going to be safe.
Yeah.
And it's not.
I was in Brookhouse. It's in Gatwick. There was a G4S working there and he couldn't handle it. So he did this hidden camera in Brookhouse.
Yeah.
Do you know, loads of people don't have a clue, Mel.
No.
How the system works, how the prison works.
I'm happy to carry on or wrap up as you wish. I don't know if there's anything you want to say.
I don't know. Am I said good?
You've been amazing, Shuri.
Is it now? God. I mean, I'm living here for a long time now, Mel. Nearly 22 years now. So from under 16, I'm living here. I'm living more than my country. And what I've seen and what I witnessed in my country, I haven't witnessed here. No, I know some systems are fucked up, really. What I see is you got opportunities. You can find things that you want to do. If you got any idea, it can be acceptable, you know. Yeah, people are really lovely. And I love this land. I got fed, kept it warm and everything in here. So this is my place now.
Obviously, everything that Shiva has really kindly opened up about in this conversation is nowhere near touching the surface of what you actually have been through, because you aren't going to describe how you were raped, how, what you...
On the time, yeah. I mean, if I'm on the right time, I will, yeah.
But you, that's so much for you to bring up.
Yeah.
You're not going to describe exactly what happened. Shit. Because...
Animals, mate.
Yeah.
Ripping apart like a chimpanzee. You okay?
Yeah. Ah. I just want to give you a big hug.
And... Oh.
If you are interested or concerned by any of the issues raised during this podcast, then please get in touch at contact@earthrights.co.uk or visit our website www.earthrights.co.uk. You can find full recordings of all of the episodes on most podcast platforms or on the Earth Rights website, referenced in the show notes. We host a blog on there too, as well as recommendations and other information. Please also join in on the journey by following our Twitter and Instagram account @earthrights_.
If you would like to be involved in an episode of the Earth Rights podcast, then please also get in touch. This Earth Rights podcast was hosted, produced and edited by us. Music and sounds were specially made for Earth Rights by the Mowgli Wild Boys, who are currently recording a new LP at Circuit Studios in Nottingham. Please follow their Instagram and Facebook @Mowgli Wild Boys.